Hello, my friends. I am so excited to be back with you. I have an interesting topic today in light of the fact that it is December 10th in my world. I'm talking about Santa Claus and the American flag. Just bear with me. You'll get it. It's kind of an interesting topic in my world because I get asked all the time how I feel about Santa Claus. And as a Christian, do I think that celebrating Santa Claus is wrong or having Santa Claus for Christmas is wrong? And that might seem like a weird question to you, but I actually have an experience with my youngest daughter that firms up the reason why people believe this way. When she was in middle school, and I think like seventh grade middle school, because she was older, I said something to the effect of, you know, since you don't believe in the tooth fairy anymore, do we really still have to do it, or can I just give you the money? And I have to tell you, her reaction was knee-jerking. If you know my youngest daughter, you're going to appreciate the story, but she was shocked, like literally shocked. I can't, there's no words I can explain. She was so shocked that she actually began to cry. And then, knowing my daughter, she let me have it like full barrel. She said something to me like, and I'll never be able to mimic her tone of voice, but she said something to me like this: "I can't believe you've lied to me my entire life. I suppose you're going to tell me that Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny aren't real either." Oh my gosh, what do you do with that as a parent? Because I was going to tell her that. But I cannot tell you how traumatized this child was by our conversation. She was truly devastated. On the other hand, I was completely dumbfounded. I really would have never thought that she would have been surprised by this news. Interestingly enough, though, now that she's a junior in high school, I can tell you, if I look back at it, I'm not so sure why I'm so surprised that no one had talked her into believing that these things were fables. In fact, her best friend, who is and was around our house constantly, is a Jehovah's Witness. And if she wasn't able to persuade her either, what was it? I thinking I could do that. And the reason is because she stands so firm in her beliefs. She'll hear what you have to say and openly talk about it with you, but forget it if you want to change your mind. Future lawyer or politician, maybe? Who knows? But I bring this experience to light because it reminds me that we do run a risk of setting our kids up for not believing in Jesus if we lavish ideas on them, such as Santa. And that's why people ask me this question. And they want to know if I think it's wrong. So do I? Does it really matter what I think? Because you're going to do what you want to do anyway. But I want to talk about it. I think that while we make decisions for ourselves, which we should, that we not only have to decide if we're going to do these things, we have to decide how we're going to do these things. And so do I think that Santa is wrong? I guess I don't see what the harm is of celebrating an idea of someone who gives gifts to children. I also see the other side of it as well. But I think it's the same idea as putting your hand up to your heart and saluting the flag. Okay, well now I've really ticked off a bunch of people, especially my fellow Americans. But I hope you'll keep listening. When my kids were little, we decided that we wanted to make Christmas about Jesus and not about Santa. But we also wanted to give our kids the gift of imagination. I know what you're thinking, but it's really not a dual-minded thought process. Because we didn't celebrate Santa Claus. Santa brought our gifts, and he still does, and I have high schoolers at this point. Not that this is really relevant, but for us, we made it really important that we did several different things. We honored my husband's hard work throughout the year because we wanted to give them a reflection of what hard work can do for us. And so we would always put love mom and dad for the more expensive gifts that were brought. And for the rest of them, Santa somehow miraculously delivered them. Our day wasn't about Santa. It was just who brought our gifts. Our day was about the greatest gift that we'll receive and the reason why we celebrate Christmas. It's the idea of this, of the birth of God as a man in Jesus. And I do the same thing when I raise my hand to the Pledge of Allegiance or sing the national anthem. I thank God for the grace that he's given to me to allow me to have this country that protects me. And I thank God for the lives of those people who sacrifice, not just death sacrifice, but a commitment. Because to be in the military is fully a commitment for your life. And so I thank God for those people who made this commitment that allows me to live in the way that I do physically. But I don't celebrate those men. I don't celebrate this woman. I celebrate God. Because in reality, tomorrow, my flag could be gone. So I don't worship my country or my flag. I pay respect to it. There's a difference. I teach biblical courses at university level, and in every class, in some way, we talk about the nations of the earth in contrast to God's plan. Throughout the Bible, humans are called to task for putting earthly kingdoms above God. From front cover to end cover, it's always a part of the conversation. And in the New Testament, and more specifically in the book of Revelation, we're reminded that we're not to hold the values of our earthly nations in greater regard than our own faith. Ever, ever. But I want to ask you this question. Why would we? Because one of the greatest and at the same time vilest nations to exist was Rome. And look around you. Does Rome still exist? Well, in some ways I would say yes, but not as a government, not as a military, and definitely not as a global power. One of the other topics that we talk about in class on a regular basis is that God requires our hearts. And do you know what it means to give someone your heart? Love today is a household word, but it doesn't carry much weight with it. We say love to a lot of things. Those of you who've made major sacrifices in your life for a loved one probably understand this. There are many of you listening who have cared for sick ones in your family, have given up following career paths or athletic dreams or, you know, whatever it is, right? Those of you who have made those types of major sacrifices in your life for a loved one probably understand this concept of love. At the same time, I would say to you, those of you who have been married for You know, I originally thought 30 plus years, but I think it's deeper than that. As a chaplain at the hospital, I meet people all the time who are grieving the death of a loved one. And the deep places of grief that I find are those people who have had good relationships for somewhere over 45 plus years. I'm not saying there's a specific magic number, and I think that's the point here. But when you have been married for that number of years, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of sacrifice, a lot of hard work, a lot of devotion. And it's this idea of giving our hearts away, which means we're willing to put our dreams on hold, or our own ideas or passions become second to another. It means seeking ways to bless the other person. And if you look at scripture as that model, you see that in the disciples. And we just talked about this in class the other day, and it's such a fascinating story to me. There were several disciples who were fishermen, and not just fishermen, but successful fishermen. John, one of the disciples, his father was a fisherman who, in a small community, was well known. It was not just him and his brothers who fished, which was common for your sons to do what you did. But it wasn't just him and his brothers that did this. He had hired help. So when you hire help, you have a big enough system in which you're making money and you're making your productions larger, right? So when the disciples were asked to put their lives on hold for 3 years, and I say 3 years because that's our idea of this ministry that Jesus had for 3 years, when they're asked to do that, they really and truly are making a massive sacrifice. And I think that's comparable to us in marriages. If we have this deep-seated love, we often are making these major sacrifices. I think also the same idea holds true in our relationships with God. We don't give our love just because we have to do it, right? In any situation, we don't love just because we have to. And there are marriages today that are arranged marriages, and they're very successful. But those people don't love because they have to love. They grow to love one another, and there's an experience that takes place there. It's the same experience that takes place when you have this crush that you marry, and then you get into real life together, and then you have to love, right? You don't have to love, you want to love. And it's the same thing with this relationship with God. It's because we want to, and we show our appreciation for who He is in our lives, and for the things that He's done for us, for our blessings. And there's another aspect of that that a lot of people don't like to think about or talk about, but if you are married or you have a relationship with someone in which you love, I'm guessing 9 times out of 10, most of you have experienced tension, maybe anger, maybe an argument or two in your lifetime. And I think the same thing still holds true with God. I think He understands when we're frustrated and angry or disappointed. I don't think He expects us to set aside those emotions just because He's God. I think He expects us to get over those emotions because He's God. But I don't expect that He doesn't think we'll have them. And so in all of these types of relationships in which we truly love, it's because we want to. But in all of those relationships, we also hold God above those things. God's relationship with us is greater than that of our marriage, greater than that of our friendships, greater than that of our family. And guess what? Going back to the idea of Santa Claus, God is above Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny or the American flag or whatever nation you support. It's above the nation itself. God is above the nation itself. In my book, in my sessions that I work with individuals on how to develop a deeper relationship with God, this is a topic that I talk about. Not about Santa or the flag, but about allegiances. Because in order to experience inner peace, we must be able to first strip away all of those things in our lives that block our view to Christ. And if we can't do this, or we're not willing to do this, then we can't experience God at the fullest levels. Draw a picture with me for a second. Have you ever been surrounded by a litter of active pups? It's not an easy task to sit in a litter of pups. Not newborn, but you could experience the same thing with newborn, I suppose, but the activity that's going on with these puppies, they're so active and so curious, right? So it's not an easy task to sit within that space and not feel joy at their crazy antics. Even if you're not an animal lover, there's just something about their little antics that kind of poke at your heart. And when we leave that space, we still feel the remnants of that joy. But the core of it's missing, which means it doesn't linger. 5 years from now, you're not going to be able to recall that moment you sat in that litter of active pups and felt happy and felt joy. Because it's not a core thing for you. It was just an experience. And there's a similar experience that occurs at the holidays for most of us, not all of us. We're surrounded by people that we love. And when the day ends, we all go our separate ways. And we kind of experience this same feeling, but there's a difference. There's a difference versus the way that we felt with the pups. Because we still sense the love from our family and our friends, even at distances. Those of us who have lost family, we still feel that sense of love, even if they're not even here physically with us on earth anymore. And that's because they have a place in that core. They're not the core, but they have a place in that core. And they're not the core because God has reserved that spot in the center of our lives. Whether you honor God in your life or not, it doesn't matter. God is still that core place. He still reserves that. If you do recognize it and you allow him into that place, then just like your family and friends leave a lasting warmth in you, God who sits at the core isn't diminished for any reason. For any reason. Because if you place God in his proper place in your life, through the ways that the Bible teaches, I guarantee you there is no manner in which that sense of love cannot be felt. It can't be changed. It exists regardless. And you see, I believe that because God has been proven to have been around since the beginning of time. I'm not going to get into all of that, but there's proof. Santa Claus hasn't been proven to be into that space. And God, who's an ultimate warrior, has outlasted any nation that has ever risen a flag or a war cry. God is the core. So in this holiday season, whether you celebrate Santa Claus or not isn't really all that important. But celebrating God is a different story. And I hope that in this holiday season, you will find that place with God, and you will make that peace with Him. There are all kinds of resources on my webpage at monicaswink.com. And there is a link on the homepage to email me. If you choose to do that, I will respond to you. I love you guys. Have a blessed holiday season with your family. Until next time, have a good one.